Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Their software enables truly personalized one-to-one interactions between marketers and customers across all channels. They help you build loyalty and enrich the customer journey while increasing your revenue. Go to emarsys.com/futurecommerce to request a demo and see for yourself how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce.
Hello and welcome to Future Commerce, a podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is Ryan, not Brian. Ryan McInnes from Voices. How are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. And glad that you could join us. Ryan, as you all know, is knee deep in traveling the globe. He's in Italy right now for his anniversary. So congratulations to he and his wife. Certainly don't want to pull him away from his Italian vacation and the vistas he's taking in there. He's probably in Venice. There is retail to talk about. There's commerce to talk about, and we'll be darned if we let a week go by without having that happen. So Ryan McInnes, who you're among the few and the proud of our alumni in that you are a reappearing guest now on the show. So I don't know if you're as inspired or as honored as you should be, but we're glad to have you.
Yeah, I think humbled is the right word. And I also feel extremely privileged that I share a similar sounding name to Brian, which I've been called for most of my life. So it's almost as if this is a seamless transition and people, regardless, won't really know who's speaking unless they really listen, because it kind of just sounds like Ian when you say it.
If you get really excited and start screaming in the microphone, nobody will know anything that has even changed. I mean, Brian is very excited about commerce.
Exactly.
As well, he should be. And based on the NPS, you know, whatever comes back from this episode, I don't know, maybe Brian just stays in Venice. That'd be fine.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we've got a lot of interesting stuff coming down the pike here. We're going to get into a whole lot of that here today. But before we do, we want you never to miss one episode of Future Commerce. The best way to do that is to subscribe. So make sure you head over to wherever you get podcasts, Stitcher, we're on Spotify. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever podcasts are consumed, we're there. And then also, you can listen on any smart speaker device with the phrase Play Future Commerce Podcast. And yeah, okay. Oh my goodness. We have, it's been a little while. I did want to throw a few things out at the top. You were at Shop Talk. It was the last place I saw you. How was that show for you guys?
It was really good. Yeah, that was the first place we physically met, which I feel like is how a lot of conversations go when you actually get to meet someone. You're like, it's been so great knowing you for X amount of time, and now to actually see your face, you're like taller than I expected. Your voice definitely matches your personality, like all these things. Your glasses are a lot cooler than mine, those kinds of conversations. But Shop Talk was really cool. I liked it a lot. Of all the conferences that we've been at and have kind of been involved with, that was probably the one that I think we saw you know, the best turnout for.
For those who are new to the show or don't remember, just give me a quick snapshot of what Voices is and does and what you do there.
Yeah, so we're basically the B2B solution that kind of mirrors the Alexa experience. So if you're a brand and you want to voice enable your website or mobile app, you come to us and we make sure that it's based off of your data, your product catalog, and all the intelligent smart stuff that's related to your brand, so that people aren't asking for the weather. They're actually asking for things that are relevant to what makes you money and keeps your customers happy.
Shop Talk's an interesting show because there's certainly a wealth of brands there. So on the B2B side, you definitely connect with them, but you feel like you connect more with the marketing sort of arm of a larger B2B business that has a traditional wholesale sort of a avenue, or more on the IT side, or both. Like, who are you selling to in at Voices?
Yeah, so it's mainly the people that run brand or digital. So a lot of most technologies today will actually go from the bottom up, and there'll be developer-based tools or open APIs that people can just kind of plug around with, where we're trying to build a top-down model where we sell the vision and the dream to somebody who's like a chief digital officer in charge of the future of that brand. And we tell them kind of how voice is going to shape the way their consumers are going to interact with the world around them. And then from there, they say, okay, can we put this in our roadmap? Is this feasible from an implementation standpoint? So that's kind of who we sell into.
And that makes a lot of sense, because I feel like that's like the persona of someone who attends Shop Talk, right? So it's someone who runs brand or digital who's looking, you know, specifically to find, to help build out the brand roadmap. And they go to Shop Talk to get, you know, customer stories of other people who are doing this and doing it well. That's kind of, that's very interesting. Actually, speaking of Shop Talk, a new conference from the folks at Shop Talk called Grocery Shop has, they just announced, and they've got a call for speakers open. It's groceryshop.com. I love that they call it Grocery Shop, which is just like, it's, it just rolls off the tongue. It will be back at the Aria later this year, October 20th through 31st, in Las Vegas. So, I thought they were done with the Aria. They did it there a year or two. They did Shop Talk there a year or two, but, sounds like they're back in the Aria for the Grocery Shop, conference. Do you guys engage with CPG brands that are in grocery, or?
Yeah, no, totally. I think, the Amazon Whole Foods acquisition has definitely gotten a lot of people attention to the actual, like, ease of ordering, and then obviously the distribution of stuff. I think if you look at I think Instacart released some interesting numbers around how many businesses are working with them to sell their groceries because of the fact that they realize that the Amazon Whole Foods relationship is so strong. And that's where you obviously see like Google Express and obviously Target acquiring Shipt. And that's kind of been a race to say, how can we make people finding foods really easy, but then how do we get it to them in a way that they're used to, i.e. Prime tomorrow, with their food. So we definitely have seen it a lot from like, opening my fridge, what kinds of things am I running out of? And I will just say, interestingly enough, this is like the third conference in the next like 6 months that's going to be in Vegas. Even shop.org moved LA to Vegas. And I just feel that Vegas has become the focal point for everyone who's in the business of making money to then be in a place where most people lose it.
Yeah, this is like the plight of my existence. I was in Vegas 5 times for conferences in 2017. I've been there 3 times already in 2018. Doesn't look like it's going to, I'm at least going to hit 5 again this year with Grocery Shop and shop.org. You know, we were just there for Shop Talk, Magento Imagine, and there's another one coming up pretty soon, which escapes me. But it's all starting to blend together. But at least they're all at different resorts, or else I'd be in real trouble. It's really interesting. So, from a sort of brand perspective, I think the last time we spoke, you said you were bringing on some folks, and you had some interesting sort of case studies that were coming about. Anything new and exciting you want to talk about on the voices side?
Yeah, so we hope to be able to launch some customers in the next month or two. We did publish an infographic yesterday that kind of went viral. I don't know what the standards are of virality these days. but we broke our own internet, if that gives sense of the word. And so basically what we did is we aggregated a bunch of the most popular statistics around voice adoption. And that can be related to retail and commerce, but just kind of consumer behavior around the space, how far we've come. And so we published that yesterday, and it's been amazing. People are reaching out, asking if they can, you know, get our take on the fashion industry or, you know, grocery, for example. People are asking if they can be involved in an advisory capacity because what we're doing is really cool. Like it's definitely put a lot more eyeballs on us, and definitely
that's cool.
More of us. Interesting, because I feel like everybody in the voice space now, before they kind of dive in and do stuff, is looking for as much information about it as possible. So our approach now is saying, of course, we want to launch a customer, but while we're waiting for that, the ability to do that, let's put some stuff out that is very referenceable and people will find helpful about the space. And I didn't realize, you know, it's the fastest consumer technology to reach 50% adoption in the U.S. you know, ever, kind of thing. And so cool to kind of see that and how it stacks up to the internet, mobile devices. So
that's killer. We, you know, what's really interesting is how people are starting to envision voice as part of their brand, and they're sort of understanding that it's the kind of thing that needs, it makes you sort of question, or at least what I perceive, it makes you question sort of how your voice or how your brand voice translates into other mediums that's not just written word or words on a page or just a logo, you know, a logo mark. It's something more. And I feel like we're at this really great turning point for brands that are realizing this has to be part of a larger strategy to give, you know, voice, with air quotes, voice to their brand in a new way. And it makes them, you know, makes them take a step back and think more broadly about what the next 4 or 5 years are going to look like. And that's, I think that's, you know, good in general for everybody, especially the consumer. We see more differentiation. I think we're going to see a lot more differentiation rather than a lot of the Me Too's, which, you know, I feel like a lot of, you know, a lot of brands are engaging in these days. Anyway, very, very interesting.
I mean,
stuff.
Just quickly on that, I think that the advent of voice in AR and VR is the best thing that brands can have the ability to interact with and leverage when it comes to competing against Amazon. Because of the fact that Amazon, of course, is pretty big in voice right now, but AR and VR, I don't see anything about what they're doing with that. So a lot of people experiment with, you know, picking out paint for your wall with Sherwin Williams on in AR, and you're seeing that as well with Lowe's, and then Home Depot's added voice, and then some AR experience.
Yeah.
So it's going to be super interesting now that Oculus has come out, $199 price tag, of people being able to use that from a consumer standpoint. It's going to be really interesting to see how these emerging technologies maybe blend together in a world where your digital strategy is, we have an AR experience that also has or we have a VR experience that's powered by voice as well, to be able to just be immersed in something with your voice to kind of navigate through it.
Oh, yeah, that's actually really astute. It's something we hadn't actually covered on the show just yet. The Oculus Go finally shipped. So that's cool. Big write-up on The Verge, actually, you know, covering a bunch of stuff from F8, which I think I'm going to be speaking with Brian about pretty soon. We're going to get into a little bit. But VergeCast had a really great in-depth sort of long-form Oculus Go review. I'd push you over there for the in-depth on that, but I think it's interesting. Have you had a chance to play with the Go at all?
I know a bunch of the guys on the team, so I have played a little bit with Oculus stuff in the past. I have to figure out what state of mind I need to be in, like sitting, standing, to experience VR, because as somebody who gets motion out of the car today, I need
okay.
You know, kind of find a happy balance between doing something really cool and realizing that, you know, playing a running game in which I need to kind of physically move around as well is probably not where I need to be. But I definitely think that, like, being courtside at a Celtics game with VR is way more of a powerful experience than watching it on however big TV that you have in your living room.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Especially when there's details that you could probably get in VR that you wouldn't get elsewhere. You know, that sort of an experience. You're kind of a sneakerhead, right?
Yeah.
So actually that ties to what it's almost like. I know how to podcast. That's going to be a great segue. There was this great story on L2, that actually, popped up a few days ago. Simon, Birkenhead, writing over on the, L2 blog. Secondhand is the new. They have this really great overview of, you know, of resale, like sort of the resale market, and how resale and consignment and that sort of thing is definitely driving a lot of digital commerce. So I thought I'd pick your brain a little bit about sort of where your head is at and where you think, you know, commerce and secondhand commerce and consignment are sort of heading. I know that, like, for those who don't have a context, you know, outside of eBay, and those sorts of, marketplace channels, secondhand, purchase, of things like luxury goods, you know, hard to find, limited, you know, limited quantity, limited release items, sneakers come to mind. That is a massive market. And in fact, according to True Facet, in this blog over on L2, that it took that secondary market took a dramatic turn between Q1 and Q4 2017, had an astonishing rise, according to them. And things like brands like Tiffany, you know, seeing tremendous success. And actually, a lot of luxury brands are starting to dip into doing authorized resale themselves, like Rolex and others that are actually helping authenticate and drive some success for larger marketplaces. But and do you ever buy secondhand sneakers? You ever buy you in that market?
Yeah. So like, I don't know if you've ever heard of the app called GOAT. Mm-hmm. So basically, I'm a big sneakerhead, but obviously, I can only buy as much as my small Boston apartment would allow me to. My better half makes sure that, you know, it's kind of like beers in the fridge. Like, as long as you're able to maintain a certain amount, of course, you can buy a little bit more. But once you reach a point where you have more shoes than you wear, like, you got to cut that off. So right now, I've only used GOAT a handful of times to be able to buy shoes. But I will tell you that their business model is fantastic. They just merged with Flight Club to be able to have an in-store presence, which is one of the biggest sneaker stores in the country.
Right.
I think it's really cool what they're doing, because what they're doing is they're pairing the people who go out there and buy shoes at wholesale value with people that are willing to spend wholesale or secondhand prices for them. So like, it's not like you're going to buy shoes that are, you know, $10,000, but if you want a pair of Nikes that just came out and they're, you know, $200 somewhere, but shoes on GOAT app for, you know, $75. It's kind of like sports equipment, but at the same time, I feel that everybody has kind of moved away from this mindset of, I have to have it brand new because I know that inherently it's going to get dirty. I'm going to scuff them. And now what's interesting is, like, wearability is a very attractive thing in the sneaker community, being like, certain shoes look better when they're broken in. And so the world of not creasing or scuffing them to look good only makes sense if you live in a world without precipitation. Like in Boston, I walk around and say, my shoes aren't creased. There's no scuffs because I just walked in a puddle on the way over here today. So that secondhand market, even companies like OfferUp, I was just at Collision and the OfferUp CEO is on the stage talking about basically beating Craigslist to the punch of offering something super local and personalized for buyers and sellers to interact and sell all the stuff that they have in their house. So I think right now we're in a time where secondhand doesn't have as sour of a taste in its mouth as it used to, because we're like, oh, that's somebody else's stuff. As now it's like, I don't want to buy it brand new because of the depreciation of it, but I also want to experience the product. I'm okay giving up the fact that I'm not a first buyer of it, or I'm not the one who gets to open the package myself.
So that's interesting that you, so yeah, actually I'd love to get into a little bit about, you know, what Collision was like. I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. I wasn't at the, at that conference. I found the GOAT app. So I'm a hype beast in training. I'm a baby hype beast. I don't know anything about this, the sneaker community. I got into sneakers, accidentally, in that I wanted to buy a bunch of orange shoes for, this conference that I go to. So I go to Magento Imagine. I was the master of ceremonies last year. I wanted to buy a bunch of orange shoes. And I was like, you know, I've been sort of prepping for that. So I got some really cool shoes that I was like really jazzed about. It's neither here nor there. But then I saw there's these LeBron 15s that sort of like the waffle looking ones. They have the orange box, which they were limited release and they were really hard to find. I was checking them out on eBay, and that's how I found the GOAT app. And I realized, you know, just kind of getting into that world, it's a culture and a type of retail that defies all logic in what we usually consider to be best practice or, you know, good prescriptive advice in digital commerce. So if you're a retailer, you're like always trying to streamline the path to conversion, right? So especially like when we're talking about voice, like one intent driven, you know, voice command can basically tell someone, I want to purchase that, express an intent, and boom, it's done. And that's awesome. Unless you have a limited quantity of a product and you have, you know, bots that are trying to purchase that thing in mass and sell it out so they can sell it on a secondary market. And then you want to make the purchase, you want to authenticate the purchaser and want to bet that that person's a real person. And then you have all sorts of business rules and order management that kind of follow that up. You actually want to make it more difficult to purchase is really what it comes down to. And you really want to sell it through to your most loyal, you know, fans who covet this and they want to keep it and hype it themselves. So, it's an interesting thing. Like there's so many, brands that have apps that only engage in commerce on those apps. It just defies all logic and what, you know, what we think the world is moving towards in general broad e-commerce. And I think that that's fascinating. So as somebody in this space and I have a mind, you know, my mindset is around digital commerce, the fact that all the things that I think as true, that are these truisms, for e-commerce are being completely defied by a passionate group of people who, and the brands that are connecting to them. And they're basically causing me to question, you know, what I think a consumer, the pain that a consumer will go through, and put up with in order to acquire a product that they love. Anyway, I find that fascinating. I'm definitely wanting to learn more. And that's part of why this blog caught my mind is that, caught my eye is I think we're going to see a lot more of this. Especially as brands get better about, you know, acquiring customers and making their customers passionate about their products.
Yeah. I mean, I also think it depends on what kinds of products you're talking about. Like even secondhand watches for men is a huge industry that's huge right now because everybody realizes that the day you're going to buy a $10,000+ Rolex is over, but maybe you want one that is from the 60s that reminds you of your grandfather that he used to wear, and you're able to go to a lot of verified secondhand watch shops that say, hey, we have this 60s Rolex that has the same everything on the back end, and we just kind of replace the glass on the front, and it's like $2,000. And people are willing to pay that because they feel like they're not getting the depreciated value of the $10,000 one, but there's that personal connection and there's some sort of story behind it, which is how I feel about sneakers too. It's somebody who just recently became a nosebleed season ticket holder of the Celtics for next season. I definitely want to be able to buy a pair of green and black Jordans so I could wear them to the games. And obviously that's for my affinity of the team for the sport.
Wow. Yeah.
The personality of, you know, what your shoes say about you as a person has become huge. And then obviously pop culture has a ton to do with it, where obviously when DJ Khaled partnered with Ben, who's Benjamin Kicks, who's the kind of the plug of sneaker shopping with celebrities, he goes and finds the shoes and resells them to the celebrities. When that became more publicized, that's when you started to see people, you know, going and waiting in line for the shoes and then reselling them and try to make a living off of it. And it's almost like entrepreneurship in a reseller world. People making a living or a business off of someone else's frugality on a high priced or highly sought after item, which is interesting.
And it's funny too, how often those people actually move into sort of the social influencer space too. Yeah. I mean, I'm not super clued in, but people like Casey Neistat, for me are the ones who actually have, who have made me aware of, you know, it's not a subculture. I wouldn't say it's a subculture, but the sneaker subculture, it's like that. I'm not a skateboarder. I never have been. I'm not a, you know, I don't generally follow people on YouTube, but there are certain people whose personalities poke through often enough and I watch them or I'm influenced by them often enough that, it makes me more aware of the world around me. And then I start to, you know, then I'm checking out other people's Jordans and I'm checking like in my whole perspective is being opened up and changed. And for me, you know, it always comes back to commerce, but in general, it's understanding that there's so much more, there's so much more opportunity out there than I think, than we realize, especially in retail. I wonder if a retailer like, Macy's or, you know, or another sort of big box retailer can sort of grab a hold some of these things and make a move. You know, Macy's I'm sure moves a lot of shoes, and a lot of watches. I wonder if this is a something that would be on a retail roadmap for, you know, a larger company like a Nordstrom or Macy's is flagging otherwise.
Yeah. That's interesting you say that because I feel like it's a good transition to our acquisition story.
Yeah, that's it's almost like a podcast from time to time. And I know how to make these nice little segues, yep. And they're even better when you point them out. A segue is only better if you point it out. Actually, that's another story over on Forbes, written actually by one of our future commerce alumni, Richard Kestenbaum, who who we always love. He's a Forbes contributor, but we always love repping his content here. So this over on Forbes.com, he has a write-up about Macy's acquiring story, which is interesting because this is one of those examples of a business I had never heard of that nobody has ever talked about, but then everybody went flipping nuts when they made the news, and all of a sudden everybody's been a huge fan forever. I can't tell if this is people that are jumping on the hype train, but seems like actually really innovative. Really innovative sort of experiential commerce that, you know, Macy's is now trying to get down on. And I know we talk about that. We've actually mentioned, you know, Brian Lang might have mentioned this, mentioned story once or twice. I probably wasn't listening. Do you have any thoughts about this sort of M&A type activity?
So cool. I think that if you read the article, talking about the fact that new inventory is cycled through every 3 months, yeah, about this level of like scarcity and FOMO, where I feel like a lot of people, when they browse, they say, well, this isn't going anywhere, or I can always come back tomorrow, I can sleep on it. Like that notion of saying, I'm going to go and think about what I'm going to buy, or I'm going to do a lot of research before I do it. But now there's this ability to say there's a finite amount of time for this, similar to kind of like season collections, like spring collection, summer collection. I think that the world is moving towards we don't want to have inventory sit out on shelves for a long period of time, and we want to incentivize people or put some urgency behind the products that we're pushing. And I feel like that's super cool, kind of going back to your sneakers thing, where it's a lot more people now are doing the pop-up shops in new areas. So for example, there's a Boston neighborhood called the Seaport District, and they're doing a lot of pop-up shops that rotate with people every few months or so, promoting small businesses. So your chance of buying direct from a very specialty kind of business could be only a matter of a month or two if you have exposure to that while you're there, as opposed to a store that's around forever, Lord & Taylor, whatever it might be. But I think it's going to be cool for them, because if you think about even Neiman Marcus doing the experiential store and some world that's going to be inventory less, or at least fewer and fewer things, this is a great way for them to experiment. They partner with certain people, they run limited promotional activities, they realize what kinds of things are moving quickly, which aren't, and they have the ability to move fast with this, which I think is going to be really key for them in order to kind of stay alive.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries. For every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll, Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com, and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Powered by artificial intelligence, the Emarsys marketing platform enables truly personalized interactions between marketers and customers across all channels, building loyalty, enriching the customer journey, and increasing your revenue. Each day, Emarsys connects more than 2,200 brands with 3.2 billion customers all over the world. Emarsys delivers over 350 million personalized interactions across email, mobile, social, and web. To learn more about how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions and actions, visit emarsys.com/futurecommerce and request your demo today. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce.
Yeah, again, you know, refer you over to the article, Rachel Scheckman, who... the founder of Story, basically, you know, founded the this experiential retail on sort of a couple things. One is, yes, everything sort of, they turn over inventory in a big way, but that they sort of bring in that new inventory that's under a theme, and every cycle has that theme. You're referencing Kestenbaum's article, a few of the recent themes are love or home for the holidays, beauty, remember when. And so a lot of the product that's in the store revolves around the theme. And I think that that in and of itself is just super intriguing. But you brought up something which was I hadn't even thought about, which is it creates scarcity, which creates value in a certain type of consumer's mind, that I don't have to sleep on, I can't sleep on a certain thing that I know and I like because that is going away at some point. And I think that, you know, coming back again to maybe like touching on sneakers again, there's a good example of a lot of that kind of collaboration, limited edition, limited colorways, collab, those things create, opportunities for brands who have tentpole products, who have evergreen products, and who have massive penetration or market appeal in a certain few products, but they can be more daring in a certain area by allowing themselves to be experimental, because this thing doesn't have to stick around forever and we're not judged on its lasting success. This is one small ephemeral expression of our brand. And I freaking love that. Like that I think really appeals to me as a consumer. And I would love to see more brands do that. And especially, not to come back to voices again, but especially with voice. I really feel like that being experimental, and especially in that medium as a new medium, is going to be super important to the success of a brand and finding their voice, and that consumers are more flexible than ever today and understanding that the way I engage with you today may not be the way that I engage with you tomorrow, because apps change every day. You know, Kanye has albums that now come out and, like, you know, get remixed every third month. Like, what you experience today with a brand is, and even, you know, things like music is ephemeral. It's always changing. It's going to be different tomorrow. And that's part of the experience. And we love that.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that how do you get people in the door is what a lot of brands are trying to figure out today. And mm-hmm. the means to say, we do this really interesting thing with limited edition apparel, partnerships, whatever it might be. And then there's some sort of ability for you to track of the people that came in and purchased an experimental thing. They then went to the home section and picked up whatever. Being able to extend your footprint in a sense, to be able to get more people into the door, to give them the impression that you're always pushing the boundaries of the brand. I think it's really smart for them in a world that everybody kind of has this instantaneous feel of what it's like to get things online. But it's interesting we're talking about M&As, because I don't know if you want to jump into this now, with Walmart, but Walmart just acquired, I believe it's 70%. I'll have to go and double check this real quick, but looks like Walmart has acquired 75% of Flipkart for $15 billion.
Oh my gosh.
This is amazing, because Flipkart is the distribution platform in India. And in a world where it's Amazon versus Walmart, on a quest for global commerce domination in terms of buying items for a low price and getting it super quick, how do you get those items to people all around the world? And obviously Amazon has become commonplace for getting things quickly here in the US. But if you can get to be the number one player in India, I think that opens a huge opportunity for Walmart and then put some pressure on Amazon to figure out what their global strategy is.
And it's certainly going to be the growth channel. Asian markets in general have been a major growth channel, but to take such a dominant play in one of the number one distribution platforms there, I think also sort of again reframing how I think of Walmart in a big way. I think it has this just reeks of Walmart's strategy. Well, aside from their poor earnings and e-commerce outcomes in Q4 last year, it speaks to how it's reframing how people like me think about Walmart, and that they're actually really smart, and they're really smart, and they have a long-term vision. And this one sort of blows me away. Have you played around, or have you shopped on Flipkart at all, or have you done any commerce in India? Like, what's your take, or what's your experience?
I haven't, but I will say that from a strategic standpoint, it reminds me a lot of Uber's venture into China, and being say that they wanted to, you know, basically bring Uber to China, and then kind of just sold off part of their business to the number one player in Asia for ride sharing. And so what's really interesting is that Flipkart is the number one distribution platform in India. Second is Amazon. Hmm. And so if they can continue to be dominant, and Amazon realizes that it's costing them more to compete in India versus versus not. I do think, though, however, this is interesting because Amazon's brand is a lot stronger than Walmart. Amazon is getting into different parts of your home and how consumers interact with things around you. And so is the brand going to supersede the worth of, you know, kind of being in more places? So if you have a startup that is number one in Hungary, but then, you know, the number two player has a stronger brand, who wins? Like, who has, even though something's more popular versus something that becomes almost like a noun, almost a like a verb being able to say, like, I'll Venmo you. Like, how does that,
right?
And when that becomes such a part of your life, does it really matter that Flipkart is number one in India because of the fact that if the brand is just as strong in India, will that acquisition, I think it will basically put them on the same level as Amazon in India, which they haven't gone to in the US, which we can talk about the site redesign. But I was at Collision, and the Walmart CTO seems like their big push now is hyper local and personalized stuff. So they want to really focus on what's trending and what's happening around you. And then based on what your order history is, your order status, provide you recommendations that's very, very hyper personalized to what you're interested in. So it's kind of like a much deeper relationship than Amazon just kind of saying, hey, you bought this, you might like this. And then just general things on sale. Well, Walmart says, hey, here are like four things you're going to care about based on where you are and what you've ordered. And then here's your current order status for your groceries, or here's a way for you to quickly reorder, you know, the eggs you just ran out of. So it's interesting.
Yeah, that's it is interesting. And actually it kind of gets me, it gets me super excited. I mean, there's so many other stories that we could probably bring out here that, you know, are tangential. You know, while Walmart is battling Amazon tooth and nail to sort of own entire swaths of direct commerce engagement, Amazon's, and this isn't in our doc, but it's off the top of my head, Amazon's out saying, we're going to take another strategy. We're going to compete with PayPal. Mm. We're going to go out there. We're going to own payments, right? And not only are we going to own payments that don't happen on our website or on our properties, it's that people that want to pay with Amazon that are shopping at other retailers. Not only are we going to do that, but we're going to do it in the same way that we do everything else, and that we're going to give you a ridiculous, you know, onboarding, so something to the effect of, like a crazy discount, something like industry standard is something to the effect of like 1.9 or 2%, for, gateway transaction fees. Like they're basically saying, we'll cover you 60 days for free. Like whatever you can cram in 60 days, we'll give to you. And they're also, you know, trying to push down the per card transaction fee, again, because it's happening through Amazon and they're already doing those types of payments with their Amazon customers today. So they're like trying to basically just eliminate that altogether. And then that's, you know, they're basically saying, hey, Alipay, we're heading for you. They're saying WePay, we're heading for you. PayPal, we're heading for you. They're thinking bigger. So while Walmart beat out Flipkart in this one particular deal, you know, Amazon takes a more global approach and says, you know, we want to own all of your payments. And, you know, the market's reacting to that. You see, you know, something like a 3 or 4% dip in PayPal stock after the announcement. Super interesting, you know, different type of a strategy.
Yeah. I mean, the only other thing I'll say on that is it just came out, I believe yesterday, that Amazon is now paying merchants to use Amazon Pay. And then I feel like in a world in which it's actually affordable, I feel like right now their credit card is actually kind of expensive to have. But in a world where they can drive that down, having a credit card to use while people are shopping via Amazon Pay, using Amazon.com, having it in their home, it gets real pretty quick.
It does. Yeah. And of course, I like that we're talking about this here because Brian Lane can't talk about it at all. So that's great. he actually works for Amazon Pay proper, and his thoughts and opinions are not those of his employer. Copyright, trademark, 2018, Brian Lane, Amazon.com. Gosh, this is so good already. You had a couple other stories here I want to make sure that you get to. What was this mobile commerce growth story that you popped
in? Yeah, I saw this article the other day on ZDNet. And it sounds like, according to Adobe, we're finally going to be at a point where mobile takes over desktop in terms of e-commerce search. I think this is big because we've all kind of had anecdotal stories about like mobile is going to take over commerce and or desktop. And then even retailers are saying 70% of my traffic is coming from mobile. But I don't think until this point there was like an overwhelming opinion saying like, yes, it's clear now, like mobile first. This needs to be such a big part of your strategy. So I wanted to put it in here just because of the fact that I think it's really interesting that A, it's taken us this long, and B, that even with this new data, it shouldn't be a surprise. It shouldn't be something. And I wanted to bring it up because I feel like so many people are struggling right now with mobile and trying to say, like Macy's, for example. I think one of the biggest things they did is at Shop Talk, they came out and said, we realize how big mobile is going to be for our business. So not only are we going to be working on AR and VR, but we're also going to be making improvements to the mobile app that we have. So you can scan items, you can pay for them, and then you can leave the store. And not having to talk to another human being is great for some people. That's why they ride in Ubers. But like, it's why like some people like to get haircuts where like nobody speaks to them. They just sit there and look at themselves. Like it's very interesting to see how people now, and I actually have like a very counterintuitive take on voice on this, where of course like our approach is that voice right now from a brand perspective is going to be massive on mobile because of how much stuff you're trying to sell in such a limited screen real estate space. But I will also say that I've been pretty bullish recently on how I think voice is going to not save, because that sounds like the second coming, but almost revitalize brick and mortar. Because in a world, earlier we were talking about experiential shopping and whatnot, and you have smart mirrors and you have kind of these digital shopping assistants while you're in the store. Not only see how things look on you, but being able to quickly refine and go through that process without talking to somebody, without having to really make a big deal about it. I think that's going to be huge as well. I kind of go back to the Tesla example again, but if a big, you know, hologram Tesla comes up in front of you and you say, show me this in black. Okay. I only want don't show me the Model 3. I want just look at the Model S. Okay. What are the specs on this? Kind of having that conversation of what you're most interested in. And that's why I think the mobile conversation is important, because then it starts to get people thinking about, now this has become such a big part of my business. How can I cover my bases with everything else that consumers are trying to interact with?
Yeah, for sure. I think the antithesis of this argument, though, is that mobile doesn't have a direct path to conversion in the way that desktop has, or it's, you know, my take on that is the omni-channel take, which is that there are many types of conversion. It's not always just direct path to purchase. Also, we have a customer acquisition attribution issue nowadays, because there are so many channels that we can acquire a customer in. And we all have different means. It's like cost of goods sold. It's like we all have different means of attributing, like, you know, whatever way we attribute our customer acquisition is probably wrong, but it's what we've always used, and this probably it's just how we, you know, it's left to someone else to figure out. However, I do think it's interesting in that some of the places where people are making purchase decisions, that then they have to follow up the purchase intent somewhere else. So again, we've mentioned this on the show before, but a lot of businesses were reporting 2017 organic traffic or organic search volume decline. And I'm seeing that for certain retailers that we're doing consulting work for, also dipping now through well into Q2 in 2018. And we're theorizing that a good portion of that is that the dominance of players like Amazon mean that people are going directly to Amazon and searching directly on Amazon when they're in the mindset of making a purchase decision now. So it only makes sense that in order to salvage, or in order to have better purchase experiences and salvage those types of customers who are otherwise lost to other channels, we need to give them the opportunity to purchase when they're at the moment of purchase, when they've made that decision to purchase. And this is that notion of passive commerce that we had, that we've talked about in the past, is that, you can be in front of a customer, daily on social, but when they're ready to purchase, they're ready right there. Why do we, acquiring them to our direct consumer channel is, difficult and expensive. And we have to own their inbox. We have to, pay for a bunch of lead back ads to get them to there. Anyway, all that to say, companies like Amazon or companies like Instagram, or Facebook, now with Instagram enabling in-app purchases, is the path that we're on. It is going to be the shortest path to purchase from a brand acquiring a customer on social to actually completing that sale and delivering them a product. And so I would surmise that we'll see, yes, mobile overtaking desktop. Absolutely. I agree with Adobe's assessment. Unfortunately, for a lot of us, that are investing in direct to consumer channels, a good portion of that customer acquisition is going to happen, still going to happen in channels outside of our direct control, the likes of which are like Facebook and Amazon, and et cetera. Instagram enables in-app purchases. Big write-up on it over on TechCrunch.
I will say that's interesting is, Phil, I don't know if you use Apple Pay.
I do, so, yes. And Google Pay and all the other things.
I will tell you that even going to like Subway, for example, I'm called here the king of chain food restaurants. But they have a sign that just says Apple Pay is so much faster than credit cards. Like, please use Apple Pay if you can, because like it's going to be an easier way to get through the line and hold less people up. And so even buying SeatGeek tickets, Ticketmaster, whatever, going through the process and just saying, I'm going to use the card that's on your Apple Pay. Yes, boom. All right, it's all set. Like the amount, like I watched somebody last night try to upgrade their tickets on the Celtics mobile app and have to put in their credit card information on the back, even though they had Apple Pay. And I totally agree with you. In a world that I keep saying, in a world that I need to stop watching shows, Instagram and Facebook. And obviously, your point is absolutely right. Where if you're a direct to consumer brand, that's where the majority of eyeballs and is being spent. And now, seeing a pair of sunglasses on there, clicking into it, wanting to buy it, pulls up your Apple Pay stuff. Okay, this is what your address is. Boom, shipped to you the next day. Yeah. But that's again, kind of going back to the mobile thing, it's all happening on a mobile device. And I think a bigger point of it is that there's no right strategy. It's all about your customers and where they want to shop today. People who shop for sneakers, a lot of them are cool with using the GOAT app, but a lot of them still like to go and touch the shoes and try them on. And it's all a matter of preference. So there's no right or wrong way to do it. I think what's going to be really interesting to see is now that we have all of these options, voice, AR, VR, in-store, IoT connected devices, how do brands differentiate themselves, not only of saying me too or fast follow to what everybody else is doing in their industry, but saying we decided to do this and it was very much kind of away from the norm, but because we knew that our customers really wanted to shop this way, or we knew that our customers looked like this, that we wanted to then say, we're going to take a big bet and we're going to say, we're going to build this experience that's very different than anybody else. But for us, it's the smartest thing we did because of it. It was a unique experience that nobody had anywhere else. And then also, it was something that customers actually wanted. We didn't push anything down their throats because we said we also wanted to have a VR experience.
I don't know that we could possibly end on a better note. I'm going to stop us right there because that's that is what it's all about. That is exactly what it's all about. I think when it comes back to if we're making those types of decisions, technology adoption decisions or customer experience and interaction decisions, and it puts the customer at the center, and we've made those decisions not because we're trying to keep up with the pace of technology adoption, but because our customers are either asking for it from us or we know it gives them a better engagement with our brand, then we're doing what we should be doing as merchants and retailers. But when it's technology for technology's sake and Sucharita Kodali's method in her parlance, when we're doing technology for technology's sake, it's probably bound to fail. it won't hold up. The truth, the actual voice doesn't come through in the end. But I love that. Ryan, where can people find you on the internet?
So on Twitter, I'm at RKMac, RKMAC. And then, of course, I'm going to send you, Phil, the link to our infographic so we can continue. We can continue to break the internet. And also, if you're kind of trying to get your feet just gently wet in the water to learn more about voice, you can kind of see what the lay of the land is. There is no plug for our company aside from obviously the credits at the end. But you can go to voices.com and learn about more about us and what we do. And then, of course, that infographic I think is really cool.
Yeah, voisis.com. And we love your guys' technology. Great. Awesome having you on. Thank you for joining us and filling in. Brian, I hope you weren't listening to this on your anniversary trip. Brian will be back soon, but we appreciate it. Make sure to go over and subscribe. Get on the FC Insiders newsletter. That's your first touch, first look into all things that are happening here on the show. We're going to be at a couple events pretty soon. I will be doing a live podcast event with MailChimp in Atlanta. See when this drops. It'll be later in the week, next week on the 10th of May. 10th of May. That'll be in the Atlanta area. That'll be going out on our FC Insiders newsletter. We'll also be at B2B Next and B2B Online. So B2B Online, I think, is next week as well. If we're in the Chicago area, we're going to try to put something together around that B2B Next in September. So a lot of opportunities for us to take the show on the road, if you will. So the best way to find out about all of those in-person appearances where Future Commerce will be subscribe over at futurecommerce.fm and hit up the FC Insiders newsletter. All right. I'm going to try to do what Brian always does, and that's to say that retail tech is moving fast, but Future Commerce is moving faster. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks, Ryan.